Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to Clicker, I Barely Know Her, a The Last of Us HBO TV series podcast hosted by three lovely lads from Liverpool.
Each of us a big glass of wine in front of us.
Yes.
That I've convinced us all to chug down.
Yeah, because right, we just like wine.
I hope so. I hope you like it so much, or you'd be happy for it to be the last thing you ever drink.
This Beaujolais is to die for. Don't mind if I do. My name's Ben Vanel, joined by Adam Knox.
That's me, the guy who's killing us all.
And Tommy D'Asolo.
Glug, glug, glug. I'm copping the pills on day one, I reckon. Just for when I first meet him, like, can you just crush up some tranquilizers in there for me?
I don't think I can handle this. Empty town is so haunted.
Well, we got to get to, let's do a little bit of news that's come out regarding the show in the last week.
Yes.
Officially renewed for season two.
That's our podcast, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I guess.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of.
I meant to say last week it was the episode one of the show was the highest debut for an HBO show. It had massive ratings. And that's also true of this show.
I think correct. You did mention that.
I mentioned that, but I didn't say that was also true of this podcast.
This podcast is the most popular podcast in the world.
Yeah.
No, it's actually like the third most popular TV podcast at the moment, which is very
That's
cool.
That's great. Thank you for listening, everyone. Thank you for spreading the word.
Yeah. With fucking episodes like this one,
it'll
keep going. This a little bit more. This is to do with the game.
Oh, yes.
The actress who played Tess in the game, Annie Wershing, sadly passed away from cancer.
Yeah, like today, I think.
Which is, horrible news, but we talk about the game part in the sealed section later. Later on,
yes.
But I thought worth mentioning here, and
yes,
yeah.
Best in peace. That's very sad. What a great performance it was as well.
She was fantastic. I mean, the actress who is in this as Tess is as with a lot of the actors doing all of the roles in this, drawing so much from what the people who were the characters in the game did. Like,
yes,
they've got their own takes on it, but it was all there.
Yeah,
but expanded upon in this show, which we'll talk about, especially for this episode here. Just to be clear as well, if this is your first time jumping in or whatever, you've only just started looking for things.
Pardon me.
We throw our phones on the floor every time.
Tommy's first time holding an object.
Tommy only just realized people listen. Yeah. Got freaked out.
Yeah.
The show will not be spoiled. We are watching it in real time with you as well.
Yes, we don't know
we will go in it's very confusing. We will spoil the episode. We will go in depth in this episode. So don't listen to this if you haven't watched episode 3 yet.
Everything that is currently aired at time of release of the podcast is up for game.
Yeah.
But we will not be reading ahead in terms of the plot because of the plot of the video game. Which, that was the other piece of news from this week, that the show renewed for season 2.
Yes.
And what we've been speculating about in our sealed section that we do at the end of the episode where we go into the spoilers of the games is that they have said this week that they will be adapting the second game for this series.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
So, just to be clear, though, because I've seen people be confused about this.
Yeah.
The two games that are out, we will talk about them in the sealed section at the end.
Yes. That sealed section is spoilers for everything we three know about The Last of Us.
Everything that hasn't been on the TV show yet, we can't talk about in the main bit. We're just talking about the TV that's aired. I hope that's clearer now that we've gone back and forth over it several times.
Yes.
That tends to make things so much more clear
when
you loop back and say it again and say it differently.
Yep.
We've absolutely made it crystal clear by repeating writing back over the same sentence again and again makes those letters.
It's more legible. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's more legible. Before we talk about this episode, we got some emails.
Yeah.
We got a whole bunch of emails. A lot of them people sharing their thoughts on the show. People adding some opinion to it.
Mainly we want that for emails here to clickeribellyknow@gmail.com. Thoughts on this show. If you're just sending us shit about dick pills and whatever, we don't need it. I've already crushed up a ton of them and put them in our wine.
Some of the questions are obviously, you know, they don't count as thoughts. They're questions to us. Some of them are too specific and will ruin the show if we answer them. Mm-hmm. So, Isabella, thanks for your email. But everything you've asked about, we know the answers to.
Yep.
So we can't reply. But we read that email and we've read all of the others. We won't read them all on the show, though.
No.
Because there is a shit ton to talk about.
There's a lot. We got one particularly long one that we're all very interested by, but we don't have the time to go into, from Rhea.
Yeah.
A great comment about Joel's reaction to Ellie's immunity. But the one thing I did want to single out about it was that they mentioned, your podcast has been getting me through my degree. We've done two episodes. It's a short degree.
Last liner.
And also, unfortunately, we don't have that many more episodes before like a year's break.
That's the type of people who are listening to this, is that, like, you know, back in the day in like a sitcom, you get that little kid who'd already finished college and they were like, no, I've already, no.
Oh, yeah, yes.
That's the type of intelligence that we're getting.
Oh, so you think this email's come from a precocious little scamp?
A Doogie Howser type. Yeah.
They're going to drink a potion and turn into a cool version of themselves in a real weird episode.
Sure. I would like to read this email from Andrew. Andrew says, hey guys, thought I'd email in and say how much I'm enjoying the podcast. Thank you very much. Doesn't mention if he's doing a degree or not and how far in he is.
Yep.
Fan of our other work as well, which is very nice. Andrew says, I was pretty stoked when I heard you guys were doing this. I'm an Aussie that lives in Calgary, Alberta, which is Canada.
No.
You got to get in faster than that. Where The Last of Us was filmed. And hey, he didn't just notice it was being filmed there. He bloody worked on the show.
Yeah.
He worked in a couple of different departments and says, glad that you're enjoying it because a lot of blood, sweat and tears were put into it.
You can see it on the fucking screen too.
Absolutely. Mm.
The blood in particular.
We've seen all three.
Yeah.
I guess so. Well, sweat. I guess that if it's dripping
down. They're sweating.
Dripping off their
balls.
Get
real, they're sweating.
They're not fucking Prince Andrew, incapable of sweating, which I believe.
I wonder if he survived anyway.
I hope not.
He was on that plane.
Well, he was on a few of them from what I've heard.
Exactly.
So much talent and dedication poured into it and the attention to detail was crazy. Again,
I'll take Ellie across the cut. No, sorry.
I was so interested to see how it come across on TV, which, I guess working on a production like that where there's no suspension of disbelief while you can see all the bits and pieces.
And it looks like shit often as well. Even things that look high quality, the actual prop in real life, from, you know, my relatively limited experience with TV sets. I've just done a few of the Star Wars movies and the Lord of the Rings.
All of the James Bond films.
Yeah.
And the Last of Us TV show.
Jurassic Park, Jurassic World.
You've been in a lot of different stuff.
I don't like to talk about it. It makes me sound like I'm bragging.
But you brought it up just with no provocation whatsoever.
Yeah.
Well, I'm the writer-creator of all of them in secret, but I use a bunch of pseudonyms.
Ah, okay.
I'm also the most modest man on earth.
But it can look like total shit in real life.
Yeah.
Right.
And be scary. With these things like grading in something with this kind of tone and mood, it's that kind of like, it's that last bit of post that really gives it that pop. Because you're right, they're being on set, it's like, these are people playing dress up. Yeah. Is anyone going to be fooled by this?
Why
is this person walking all weird?
Yeah.
Saying brains.
Why do you keep...
stupid.
It's not 2003.
Mm.
It's not right now. Yeah. I know it's not. You've got the wrong calendar up. No one's going to believe this.
Running around the set taking down all the anachronistic stuff. Like, you're definitely fired. That was very nice to hear from Andrew. To hear from someone who worked on the show and is listening to us talk shit about it.
Yeah.
Share our dumb opinions.
Well, and also to know that there's... So this guy's an Aussie living in Canada.
Yeah.
There's a lot of goddamn Aussies working on this show.
Yeah.
Both in front of and behind the camera.
Apparently there's a lot of Aussies in Canada.
Yeah.
And they hate it over there.
Okay.
They tell them to go back home.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of going home, they're doing the opposite in this episode. They're walking.
Yeah.
They're still traveling. It's just Joel and Ellie now. They're in the forest, the woods.
Yep.
Ellie's never been in the woods before.
Mm.
They're getting by, obviously down mood from what's just happened to Tess.
Yep.
But it seems like it's been, you know, a day or two maybe it's kind of gone past.
Right. Yeah, it said they'd gone 10 miles, right? So yeah, it is probably, yeah, it's like a day's walk.
Probably a week and a half for me. And
they're in Canada. They really should be going by kilometers. Really.
Oh, true. Absolutely.
Yeah. And all people all over the place.
Right.
Yeah.
Metric system, kilometers, Celsius.
They make the most sense.
And Australian maths, which is something I've invented and is not catching on.
So they're traveling through. And I'm not sure what order this happens in if they start talking about the history of it. I think they get to this this like little, like a petrol station or something that Joel knows about.
General store.
Yeah, Joel's stashed something, some stuff.
And this is before they start having that conversation of like, what caused it all?
Oh, yeah.
But they're going in there. Joel's forgotten about whatever this thing is because he's been through, but years ago.
He can't find it.
Can't quite remember where he would have stored his stuff.
Yeah.
Which seems strange to me. Even though it's been a couple of years, it's like,
yeah,
what have you got, like 400 gas stations that you've got a different hiding spot in literally every one?
I know.
And then the answer is like under the floor.
Exactly.
The most ridiculous, like,
if you put
specific
something under the floor, it's like, yes.
And he's checking the shelves.
Yeah.
He's looking at the ceiling and shit. It's bizarre.
It is weird.
It's not in the slush puppy machine. Where the hell could it be? It
struck me as very strange that there's a room with a trap door in it and an underground, you know, like not bunker, but like an under storage area that he didn't use.
Yes.
Because we see Ellie go in there and it's very creepy and dark.
It's funny because the place is big too. And she goes down there and finds, like, I wasn't sure what that box was. Was it a box of like tampons?
I assumed it was tampons. Yeah.
I thought condoms at first and then I broadened my mind.
I had the same thing. It's like,
that's what it looked like.
Well, but what is the other like product in that part of the aisle?
Yeah.
That looks like that.
Sorry, ma'am, I'll just go down to the basement for you.
Yeah.
I'll climb down into the bunker to get your tampons.
Yeah.
But she's down there and there's a clicker.
There is.
There that,
I tell you what, they're very generous in this show with letting the makeup department get their time in the sun. It's like, you know what, let's have this guy. Let's not have them all running around all the time.
Sure, a bit blurry.
Let's get nice and tight in there, have a nice light shining on him, give everyone a good old look at what they've done to make this guy look just grotesque.
I did appreciate it because you need to get an idea of like what these things are.
Yeah.
And like, having the close-up stuff is helping with that.
I think this was the best like looking one so far in terms of like realism and detail. I thought you meant
hottest.
The one who kissed Tess, not bad either.
Yeah.
Pretty
easy,
though.
Where are those condoms?
So the thing,
you gotta be safe.
The first thing was obviously like that Ellie's a fucking idiot.
Yeah,
going
yeah.
down here. What a stupid move
yeah.
to jump down into this bunker that you can't climb back out of. It like she's exploring and, you know, she's independent, whatever, but like grow up.
Yeah.
Come on, Ellie.
Though, like,
you're 14, you should know better.
Yeah. 14's old enough that I wasn't climbing into bunkers.
I don't know. I was jumping off roofs when I was 14.
Hey, you know what? You're old enough to be using tampons. You're old enough to know about the dangers of bunkers, IMO.
I think,
I don't know.
You make a good argument.
For sure, but I assume that's the talk that mums and daughters
sure.
have.
When a mum and a dad love to be underground very much.
Yep.
They go down there and fucking have a baby.
Right.
But the other thing was this, like, clicker being down here, it's like crushed in some rubble.
Mm.
And it must have been recent because they mentioned in, like, either the last, I guess the last episode,
one of
the last two, which are the only other ones that it could have possibly been in.
Yeah, okay, you've narrowed it down.
That these things don't live for that long.
Yeah.
Yes.
They mentioned that they only go for maybe like a couple months each or something, didn't they? When they were like walking along the overpass.
Or if they turn into like the more freaky beefed up ones, right?
Yeah. Well,
there's something that can happen. Like, I don't know how they explain.
I remember thinking when they had that conversation, like, don't they just live forever?
Maybe the in-world they themselves aren't super clear about it.
Sure.
Or like,
sure.
There's different circumstances. But that did just strike, because I remembered from that episode going like, oh, is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's
then
like
let's all just hide
area.
For a fucking year.
Exactly.
And come back out.
It makes it seem a little believable then.
But it must... I guess if there's enough of them
and they get into that kind of like Rat King zone where they're all kind of linked up, then they get extended and they like kind of mutate.
Kind of weird.
So a guy like this, he'd be a freshie.
Just for how particular they've been about describing this stuff often, it's... I'd have to go back and figure out exactly what they had said or whatever.
Yeah.
Or maybe we find out more later, or maybe they don't know. So, but anyway, that was just a thought that occurred.
Yeah, maybe Joel was just talking out of his ass.
Well, he can't find a fucking box he left under the ground in a shop that's fucking 3 meters by three. Sorry, 85 feet, 16 miles.
Yeah, it's 12 furlongs.
Well, and hey, no one can Google what he said to verify it. So you could just be like, you know,
the glory days.
They actually live for 800 years.
Yeah. This is after the days where you can ask Jeeves, which I guess is what we're still doing Google, surely. But
I think.
Anyway,
I will say too, just quickly in defense of Ellie hopping down there, like dumb move, but also the fact that she's...
That'd be right. Tommy jumps in with this wildly stupid move.
She's grown up in a quarantine zone.
Yes.
She's grown up in this world. So it does also track that like she's not aware of like this is like a... You know, this is like a new dangerous world where everything's fucked up. In her head, it's like, yeah, this is just what the world is. You know what I mean? I kind of did read it as like a little bit of...
I didn't take it as that. I took it as the opposite, where she isn't not afraid of it. It's that she's kind of scary. Because the way that she cuts open this clicker's head and then stabs it, she's like, she seems almost excited to be dealing with it. So like, it by that point, it didn't strike as much as being naive as being like... actively kind of seeking trouble.
Well, and she's aware that she's... I mean, she's been told in, I think, the last episode that she... they can still, like, rip her apart.
Right.
But she's essentially... she sees this thing's trapped. It can't get at her. It's like, the worst it can do is bite me. And, like, that's no biggie at all.
And before that, she was told that this place was safe by Joel.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah,
he finds the shit. She climbs out of there. No trouble. They continue walking and there's a big crash plane.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Very cool.
That looked great.
Yeah.
And it kind of sparks this conversation about like, so were you in one of them? What was happening before this? How'd this all happen?
Yeah.
And Joel, you know, she's got a... They don't teach you this in the Fedra school about... She makes the comment of like, no, one of the lessons isn't, here's why the government was completely unequipped to handle this world-ending event.
Right.
They teach you government good in now, the Fedra school.
Before we go into this, let's read this email from Daniel. Apropos of nothing, guys. Just sorry to interrupt. So Daniel says, hey, boys. My partner and I have been noticing a trend of grains being extremely prevalent in The Last of Us. The initial outbreak happened at a grain factory. Mm-hmm. Joel was going to have pancakes, but didn't. They were offered cookies by the old couple, but didn't eat any. The only one seen eating them was the old woman, who turned first.
Joel didn't forgot to buy a cake.
Yeah, no cake. Most damning evidence of all, what does yeast do? It makes you rise from the dead.
That isn't true. But other than that,
other than that, serious point, coincidence or is the real zombie the carbs we ate along the way? Another Canadian.
This person worked on the show.
This is another.
We've got another insider in the email.
Canadian,
I reckon.
Conspiracy.
No, I think Daniel's just Canadian,
and they've just they've
not been... Aussie in Canada.
Well, you don't have to be an Aussie in Canada to have worked on the show.
No, I think you do.
You could just be a true blue Canadian.
They've that's been true. Laying the flour stuff on very thickly over the last couple episodes. They've specifically like said that's why it's happening,
yeah,
and like that's
yeah.
how it spread. I was just impressed the pancake mix specifically because Joel starts telling them like what we think is that it spread in like a common food thing like flour or sugar,
right?
So it was in bread.
Like there was a fungus, and that fungus mutated, and as was said early in the, like the first episode, like rising temperatures are causing things to be able to survive for longer and in different environments than they normally would.
And he says bread, cereal, has a little pause, and says pancake mix, and it's like thrown him back to that the day his daughter died.
Right,
he didn't cook her pancakes. Mm-hmm. Right, like that was a significant part of the last moments of his daughter.
Yeah.
And so more than just like the reason they're not infected, because it had to be a specific product or it couldn't, like, there wouldn't be survivors.
Yeah.
If it was in all flour,
yeah,
then that ended the world more full. But it obviously took a lot of people because he goes, it was a weekend and everything was gone by Monday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That still strikes me. Like knowing, you know, what it's like to experience a pandemic of a different sort, it felt like it happened very gradually, you know, like we were experiencing slowly, like, I'll work from home, oh, this is closing down, this, you know, for something to go nuts in 3 days must have been horrifying.
And then everything's over, I also do like when they see the plane and she and Ellie's like, oh, did you ever go in one of them? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, wow, that must have been amazing. And he's like, nah, it was pretty shit, really. It's like, it's nice to know that even after 20 years, there's at the this show posits the theory that flying is such a universally awful experience that you wouldn't even be romanticizing it 20 years down the line.
Which is,
you still only would remember the bad.
Because Joel only lived for 2 years post, like, big TSA flying, the things that people hate about flying now.
True.
He would have mostly lived in that glory 90s flying days.
Oh, yeah. Smoking it up. And
he probably had it. He probably
slapping every passenger, every fucking worker on the plane on the ass.
Joking about bombs.
Everyone's
it was all bomb jokes
suit.
And ass slaps all day up there, and everyone loved it.
It wasn't that bad. You got pushed into a little seat. It's like the seats probably were a bit bigger back then too.
$12 for a sandwich, and it's like, you're not even nostalgic about sandwiches. You love that chicken one Ellie was eating. Anyway,
I miss those pancakes though.
They have a talk about the plane, and there's a mass grave, and Joel tells Ellie about how they just killed a lot of people who they couldn't fit into the quarantine zones because they didn't want them getting infected, so they just fucking slaughtered them.
They told them they were taking them to a quarantine zone and went, JK.
Anyway, just hop out here for a second. And then we get like a lot. It reminded me of Lost, the transition here. Because Lost obviously is like, you know, you go from the island to the character's past, and it has a bit of like a and then we go back in time.
Yeah, a little bit of
to
fabric 1984.
On the ground.
No, not quite that far back.
Okay,
more like 2003.
Yeah, we're on. I forget if it. I think it's maybe the Saturday or something. I don't think
the
it's
30th. I think.
Okay,
September?
So that's four days after. The 26th is the breakout.
Right.
Of September, and it's this little town. Being chucked into those big wagony trucks that the military use,
troop
transport
wagons.
Shit.
Yep.
They're spray painting crosses on doors. They're evacuating this town.
Yes.
And Nick Offerman is here.
Yeah.
Downstairs, 2003. I think he's just met Megan Mullally.
Yeah.
Oh.
And,
I mean, you bring in the real world in, but it's like Nick Offerman genuinely just playing Nick Offerman in the show.
Barely different. Because he's not well known in 2003. He's still living in his gun bunker.
Yeah, he would be. Whittling away. He loves a whittle.
He's got like a prepper dungeon. Well, sorry for you. Joel clearly shows later on that prepper is the not preferred term for survivalists.
Yes.
But my granddad always called them preppers, and if he was evil, then I'll have to rethink everything.
A survivalist dungeon, as you say, yes.
So but he's hiding out as everyone in the town's being rounded up by the army, and they're kind of
not
like
today,
marking,
you jackbooted New World Order fucks.
Yep. That's right.
They're spray painting on people's doors to kind of show that they've been evac'd, but he's kind of hidden in his bunker.
Yep.
He comes out armed, ready to, you know, ready for a firefight if it comes to that. But whole town empty, and then we get this beautiful Kevin McAllister style.
Yes,
living
it
up. Yeah,
yes. He immediately hops into, and they have so much. And like, there are plenty of people like this, but he's fucking, if Captain America was real, he's Captain America. He's got the "don't tread on me" shit everywhere.
Right.
He's full on.
He already has his walls of guns, and like, first place he goes is like the hardware store. Like, he is Americaing it up.
He goes into the mains and turns the gas back on.
Yeah, yep.
He steals a boat, which seems very funny. It's the first thing he does, but it's for the purposes of having a trailer, basically, right? So he can load up everything from the Home Depot.
For whatever reason, I thought that was his boat, too. I didn't think he'd stolen it, but guess he did.
I think it was next door,
Whips the tarp off the generator, gives it a little tap, like, oh, yeah, the day has finally come.
Right.
I loved this sequence of him just, like,
a man in his element.
Just thriving, being like, I fucking knew it. I told everyone. And now it's my time to shine.
And you can tell he's stoked by it. He's chopping wood. He's growing carrots. He's cooking himself delicious looking meals.
Yes.
He's living it up on his chicken farm.
Chooks. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got the run of the whole village it turns out.
Yes.
Fences the whole thing the whole way around, sets up a bunch of traps. You see him digging holes and stuff, and he's happy. He's on his own.
Yeah.
And I think 4 years go by and someone accidentally shows up in one of the pits.
Yeah.
There's
I'm
a fucking
looking for
bloke
the white
here.
Lotus. How do you get to the white lotus from here?
Yeah. It is funny. So, yes, a man... Armand from the White Lotus.
That who it is?
It is. Yeah. It's literally Murray Bartlett, yeah.
Oh, I knew I recognized him and had no idea why. I thought you were just saying,
you must
that's
been...
the other big show that's been on. I thought you were just doing the two most recent popular things together.
Hey, let me out of this hole, god damn it. Yeah. Cartman shows up. Yeah, why not?
Yeah. So, that makes sense.
Yeah.
If I hadn't have known he was in this show already, I wouldn't have picked that it was him.
See, I didn't know, and it took me a while to pick him.
Yeah, he looks different. He
Big
sounds
beard,
different.
Yeah. He's got a different sort of constitution or, whatever you would call it, a build.
Yeah.
And they from 2007 through to modern day for the rest of this episode do the first 10 minutes of Up, basically.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, tragic romance.
Yeah.
That's what it is for a short movie's length.
Complete, like, it's this... It's really nice after, especially, you know, the Joel's daughter has died.
Yep.
Joel's partner that he refuses to acknowledge as being a partner has died.
Yep. Yep.
Even in this episode when they meet up and they have dinner together and it shows you Bill and Frank kind of meeting Joel and Tess, he goes like, my one,
my
version of your Frank. It's been down. The show is sad and hopeless and they've all lost hope. And it's such a good move this early on to switch gears and show the most cynical person in the world, the person who was ready for the world to be over even before it seemed like it was going to end.
Yep.
Showing him end up with some hope is like great, like a good, hey, it's possible to be redeemed in this world. It's possible to find something nice. It's possible to go 20 years without smashing all your wine glasses somehow. Congratulations.
They've got a bunch of houses to...
I suppose so, but even 20 years, that village would be smashed and empty by the time. But like it plays so fucking well of giving you this... point, and then it is like spelled out kind of in that letter at the end very directly.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I really loved the way that they did this. I'm not a massive fan of flashbacks often, but like going this story is just beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, it was just such a great I kind of thought, you know, it opened without this episode opened without a cold open. We just went kind of straight in. I thought, okay, maybe they're done with the kind of cutbacks, and then that just even getting that little glimpse of the military rounding people up, I was like, oh hell yeah. And then this little thing of giving not just like the days of it kicking off, but showing you kind of like where some things... I mean, we're not getting a broad sense of the world or anything outside of this little town.
Yeah.
But just seeing these little interstitial, like, this idea of, like, this is what a person's life has been over this 20-year period since it kicked off. Just, like, making the whole thing feel so lived in and so believable and so, like, fleshed out.
Because I think you get through Bill's character... The paranoia, the setting up of defenses, which is very reasonable. You get the settling in and getting into this routine, and you know he's always got his gun on him, and he's very cautious about just another person showing up, infected or no.
He's got his gun on him for the entirety of their like first interactions. Like you see him, like he has his gun on him and brings him out, and this guy, you trust him straight away.
Yeah.
You can tell that this guy's real and he's not lying about his reason for being there, and he's not a threat.
Right.
He's genuine and you can smell it on him.
Yeah.
And this also loosens Bill up a little bit. You can he cooks him dinner and shit, and he doesn't seem like the type to do that easily. But like when he sits down at the dinner table with Frank for the first time, like I loved the way he knocked the chair with his gun on his hip. He was so paranoid about this that his whole routine was thrown off he feels uncomfortable. I love that little one moment.
He has the little like scanner thing that can test if you're infected, and he uses it on him and sees that he's clear And Frank's like, where did you get that? And I was like, in my head, I was like, this would be amazing if there was like flashback within a flashback, yeah. where then we just now have like 30 minutes of just him like
going on a mission,
stealing it from yeah. some like yeah. army guy at some point.
A long story of the manufacturer of that particular yeah. unit, like having this family who he had to mm-hmm. loot, you know.
Building up to it falling off the back of a truck near his house.
This yeah, Bill fucked the guy to get this. And yeah, then it's like, yeah. have you done this before? No, no. never.
But it does give you, it does such a good job of fleshing out the world beyond, like Star Wars Mos Eisley canteen yeah, thing, right? Yeah. Of you it, giving these characters this whole life mm. here, it fleshes out every person who we're going to see from now on, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it going through that 20-year time jump again.
Right, because, yeah, it goes from, yeah, he sets up his little town to a zombie shows up and gets, you know, taken out by like a little shotgun trap.
Yep.
To, oh, okay, nice people might show up and how are you going to deal with that? To other broader, you know, contacts of Joel and Tess over the radio.
Yeah.
And Joel being like, hey, you know, it's not just like zombies, you know, like, yeah, your fence will have to get replaced, but it's not just the real monsters.
The friends we made along the way. That's right. I get it.
Carbohydrates.
Yeah. Raiders. Well, you know, it's exactly that, Knox. The yeah. progression of the world of oh, yeah, people are starting to band together and turn into fucking roving, you know, yep. warlords.
And setting that against like this really common but like lovely human personal story of just a marriage,
yeah,
like
that, yeah, yeah.
It's the most relatable, almost mundane thing in the yeah. world, because you go from the dinner, then they play a song and they kind of start connecting,
yeah,
yeah. Frank sees the piano, mm. asks if he can sit down and play, mm. he starts butchering a Linda Ronstadt song that he has the sheet music book for,
yep.
Bill takes over and does this like pretty like great rendition of it, and
like a soulful meaning. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I love this. Such an elegant way of getting them together, and then Frank going, "Who's the girl you're singing that about?" He's like, "Oh, there is no girl," and he's like, "Yeah, brother, I could tell.
Yeah,
you cooked rabbit, and you knew what red wine to pair it with."
Yes. And like Frank being this like manic pixie dream survivor against like Nick off Bill being you know the guarded,
straight laced,
it's such a,
I thought the fact that Murray Bartlett kept saying not that there's anything wrong with that does kind of undermine it a little bit. It's and a then, little
well Seinfeld is still so top of mind. Yeah, it's true. In 2003.
That's true. Did
it's
Friends true. End in 2004, I think. I so think, it's not
yeah.
over.
Damn. Fuck.
The one that got away.
Yeah.
So they sleep together. They develop this relationship, and it jumps ahead like 3 years, I think.
Yeah.
I think we go. Yeah. I was kind of trying to keep track of the year.
We go from them banging to then like
a fight.
It's 4 years on. Yeah, they're mid fight.
Yeah,
and it's a fight about decorating.
Yeah,
like they are a couple now, and they're Bill is like, no, I like things the way I like them.
Yeah,
and I want to stay, but it's that thing of like, well, they're 4 years in, and their lives are getting joined, and they have to make compromises for what each other likes.
Yeah, sure. And weirdly, it's so interesting to see like what a relationship becomes, and obviously it would not be like this in the real world, but like what a relationship becomes with literally no outside influence whatsoever.
Right.
It's literally just the two of you.
Yeah,
you're
right.
not watching things on TV. You're not hanging out with other people.
Yeah.
You don't both have your own separate friends to go and like converse with and then come back together. It's just like just the two of you in a vortex together.
Yeah.
And that's what Frank kind of needs here is he's like, I want to paint these fucking houses because we live here and it's disgusting.
Right.
I want to do up the shop so we've just got a nice environment to be in,
yeah.
and I want to have friends.
Yeah.
We're going to find some friends at some point and open our gates like we have to live as... And I get the impression that he's been making this compromise for the 4 years. If they've been fighting, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Anyway. If this is the first time he's asked to mow the lawns, or at least he's pushing for it actually happening.
Exactly.
You're right. Yeah, he's probably been holding back.
We need to get outside, get some paint, get some lawnmower petrol.
Yeah.
And make some friends, which then we see Joel and Tess having dinner with them, I think, 3 more years later after that.
Yeah, he says, oh, I've been talking to this girl on the radio.
That's right.
Yeah. You've been, what?
Whoa.
And then it's D non-old-ageified or non-middle-aged.
Yeah, they're younger.
They're just no gray. Look how old they are.
Just the department of the makeup that's doing the little bit of powder in the hair.
Yeah.
They got the day off.
Yeah.
They're hitting Calgary and just...
Hitting the slopes, maybe. Right?
I'm loving the aging they're doing in this show.
Yeah, it works
well for everybody.
Very, very gracefully done. Yeah.
They're having like this little garden party.
Yeah.
Bill has his gun just pointed at Joel whole time.
I love that we very quickly learn it's like a garden party because Bill has refused to let them inside.
He does not trust them in the house. Yeah. And they'll fuck around with my Linda Ronstadt's sheet music book.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's such a, like, you know, obviously the apocalypse has happened and we know that there's a reason to have a gun on people.
Mm.
But also, Bill's just... a bit of a shut-in.
Yeah.
Bill's personality is just that, and like fucking Frank takes Tess and he's like, oh, I want to show you something in here. And we're mates and this is fine.
Yeah.
This is good. I love this.
And the boyfriend's
scene.
Getting left behind.
Right.
Yeah. this dinner party, it's two Aussies sitting there being like, geez, how about me bloody psycho boyfriend pointing a bloody gun at you?
This guy's a fucking schizo. But he's like, I'm not. I am paranoid, though. I've got to fucking come inside. I got Rodney Rood on the fucking...
playing frog sack on the piano. Do you fuck on the first date?
But Joel and Bill are compatible, too.
Yeah, totally.
They're like, they're both the same sort of... They're very similar.
Yes.
Well, it's also Bill kind of out-assholes Joel. It's like Joel's like cynical and, you know, is like so hard-edged and what's the point? And Bill, makes him look like a ray of sunshine.
Yes. Oh, completely. Like even before we go into the flashback, Ellie's asking Joel like, okay, they're nice. He's like, well, Frank's nice.
Mm.
For Joel to think you're a fucking dick, you're exactly right.
Well, I think, that's it, right? It's such good characterization. Joel is like a man who has been hurt and is closed off, but is generally, like before that, he was like a pretty good guy, you know, in 03.
He's not like this island in the way that Bill is.
Yes.
Bill's like this by default.
Yes.
This is his like...
This is who he appears
to be.
Because
Bill didn't need anyone, and I maintain that Joel needs someone with him.
Yeah.
He cannot function on his own.
I agree.
In a different way to Bill. Like, Bill built a village on his own.
Yeah. He spent his life waiting for this moment.
He wanted it, exactly.
And then he got annoyed that this other guy showed up and fell in love with him.
Yeah. It's... Exactly right. It's an irritation to him at first. By the end, he's obviously in love with his husband. But not a given.
Sure.
But
take my husband, please.
Joel is like...
Not what he was saying.
Click him. I barely know him.
Joel is like... Yeah, the fact that...
Bit of a reality check for Bill as well, right? Because he's absolutely capable of surviving on his own or with one other person isolated, but he's also not connected to the outside world and doesn't know what the fuck is going on out there.
Yeah.
Well, true. And Joel fills him in about that. But the fact that Joel... just with what we were saying before, that Joel is like closed off, but like you could argue more cynical than Bill, because like he refuses to even acknowledge that Tess is meaningful to him.
Yes.
Right.
Like he's shutting himself off in that way, even though he needs people more than Bill does.
Right.
So if Bill can fucking do this, Joel has no excuse.
Well, Bill's not really shut up. Bill's like, I'm self-sufficient.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not saying like, it's just, I don't need anything from you.
Right.
It's fine.
Bill is not
here.
Self-destructive. But Joel is.
Yeah.
And Joel, almost salesman, he's like, I can get you a bunch of wire because these fences have only got a year left. Like, it's in Joel's best interests to trade with people because he's a smuggler.
Yes.
Yep.
And that's what he does.
Yeah.
And so they've, you know, clearly developed this relationship because we cut forward again 3 years and Frank has gotten some surprise strawberries in a little patch.
Yes.
Behind one of the neighbor's houses there for Bill.
Traded a gun for them for the seeds.
Even in the future, when food is, you know, food's important now.
Yeah.
But seeds and stuff, of course, at a premium.
Mm-hmm.
But they do grow on trees still
in
the future. A gun for some seeds.
Yeah.
You can't make any more guns.
Yeah, but Adam, it was a small gun. He points out that it was the littlest gun
more useful one. Because, Joel has left his big gun behind because there's less ammo for it back in the future.
I guess that's the other thing. And also... Bill does have more guns than any other person.
They do have a ton of guns.
They got probably a literal ton of guns.
And these strawberries look juicy and delicious.
Yeah.
And they share a lovely moment.
That's the way they seem to stay sane, right? Is having these small, like, moments of joy.
And seeing
of novelty and joy.
Exactly. And Bill wouldn't have had this without Frank there. He wouldn't have traded the gun. He wouldn't have gotten the strawberries. He wouldn't have let these people in. Frank did. And it's improved Bill's, like the little fucking giggle that he does when he tastes the strawberry and he's happy is like heartbreaking.
Yes.
Because like, or breaking might not be the right word, but he's let this person in and it's improved his life and it's added a new threat there. But Joel doesn't have that. Joel's living in this gray fucking world where he won't even let the close people in. And I love that parallel.
I love
between
this moment. I was getting choked up a lot in this episode. It was
man,
really.
I wish I hadn't have been watching it with you guys.
No, that's why I got choked up. I wasn't even watching the screen. I was just like, I love being with my boys.
It was lovely. It was really, really well done and incredibly well cast. I'm surprised you'd never picked up on the fact that it was Murray Bartlett Knox, but
a beard can hide your face.
Really, very true.
It's one of the main things it does.
Great dynamic between them. Great chemistry. Oh,
both of them incredible in this. And then so
I do love that HBO has come to Murray Bartlett after White Lotus and gone, hey, we got another project in the family for you, but this time you will be doing an American accent, you son of a bitch. Even though there are a lot of Aussies working on the show, as discussed on Clicker, I Barely Know Her, the hit podcast.
Which half of our crew listens to.
Yeah.
But
I wonder if Anatov or Murray Bartlett listen.
We got to, I mean, look, when they're working on season two, if Andrew's coming back to work on it, pass this around the crew,
we'll
man.
We'll do some interviews. Hey. Where'd you come up with your band's name? Questions like that.
Yeah.
We're the best in the biz.
Hey, Neil Druckmann, where do you get your ideas from? Oh, video games, say?
Who do you think was the real monster? Because I've got my theory.
I think it was Ickes. Maybe Oblina. The lovely strawberry thing unfortunately moves into... I don't think there's a massive time jump here, but...
Right.
Yeah.
These raiders that Joel warned them about, they're here.
They're raiding.
They're setting off the enormous flamethrowers that are lighting up the sky outside like fucking Desert Storm. Yeah. It looks incredible.
Just get out of the way of the flamethrower. Many of them just walking around, flopping and flipping
once you got
the flames.
It's all spurted on you. You're fucked.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of the, hot suit guys getting their day's pay for this.
Which, so he never fixed the fence, right?
I think he probably did.
I think he did. Okay. I think that was,
they've obviously Joel got this trading relationship with
that's
Joel.
What I, that's why I thought it was weird. I thought the implication he was meant to be like, see, but I guess he...
And when they go inside, he's like, the fence will fry him. They've got an electrified fence at this point.
Sure.
So the raiders have difficulty here, but they seem to, like, they're... There's a fair few of them.
Yeah,
there is like, and they're
a real threat.
Fucking firing back, and Bill is in the middle of the fucking street.
Yeah,
firing with this rifle. Terrible, dumb place to be.
Yeah.
I'm not a survivalist, but
he's like one house back from where they are. You'd think he could just like go upstairs and get him from a window.
He's
or something.
Got a big rifle, sniper looking thing, but he's standing in the middle of the street, and Frank comes out to. He's freaked out, and Bill turns around for a second and tells him to get back inside, which is why he gets hit with this bullet.
Yeah.
So, like, Frank has had this tangible, I am less likely to survive effect on him. I like that being shown just very physically, but then also Frank literally saves his life.
Yes. After that.
Again, like you said, it's all just like in Up when the old man gets gunned down in the middle of the street.
It's
while
the same.
Flamethrowers are roasting all of the attackers.
And as Bill thinks he's dying here, they obviously are able to fend off these guys because we jump forward again in time. But Bill's sort of what he thinks are his last words are like, please call Joel. He'll look after you. You can't be alone.
Right.
And so his last things are trying to protect Frank here. Like, he's changed so much and he's all about Frank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is so fucking heartbreaking to jump forward ahead again and see Frank old.
Yeah.
He's old. He's clearly sick. He's in a wheelchair.
Some great like makeup work here on Murray. Like you really buy that this guy's unwell. Because I think we kind of glazed over it just before the gunfight. Offerman says something to him like,
"Oh yeah."
What does he say? He's like, "I never Like, I never cared before. Like, yeah. you've made me...
Yeah.
You've given me fear.
Yes.
For the first time in my life.
I wasn't afraid before you showed up. Yeah, something like that.
Yes. Oh, and he also says, I'm sorry for getting old faster than you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, again, is bitter irony because, Frank is unwell. He can't walk. He's, like, losing his motor functions.
Yep.
And he's doing paintings and he's, you know, he's living, but... He's not well at all. You can see it, and he's taken all these pills, and it's an old couple.
Yeah.
And so they go to bed, and Frank's eyes sort of shoot back open, and we see him the next morning sitting in a chair, and he's like, you know what? I've been up all night about this.
Yeah.
I've made a decision. I want to go to Disneyland.
I'm
going to start a podcast.
And Bill's like, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to put you down.
Well, you mean that thing that Ricky Gervais had done like one of when the world ended?
So, yeah, he's decided I want to. And the last sort of bit of their story here is like an assisted suicide thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He wants to have a nice last day, gives him a list of things.
Go to the boutique.
Yeah.
Get some nice clothes. You'll wear whatever I goddamn well tell you to wear.
Yes. I've made up my mind about this. So, like, please just do it with me.
Yeah.
Oh, but not with me, like for me. Like, let me have this day.
Yep.
Yep. What does he say? He says, he says, yeah, we'll have dinner, we'll get married, which, by the way, there's no celebrant around. So it's like, why did they not just do this at any point?
Sure, where'd you get these rings from?
Just say it. Yeah.
So they do that. And yeah, he's like, we'll do that. And then we'll have a nice dinner. You'll crush up these pills. You'll put them in my wine. And then I'll go to sleep in your arms, and then that'll be it. And Bill is like, I'm not going to be able to do that. And Frank...
He's devastated by this. Yeah. And it's like awful to watch him so heartbroken by this. But at the same time, he quite quickly seems to go, oh, I get it.
Well, he says to him, what does he say?
Do you love me? And he's like, well, yeah.
Love me like I want you to.
Yeah.
Which is,
bit selfish, but he's made his mind up clearly about this and he's going to do it with or without Bill, is the impression.
Mm-hmm. And as with a lot of cases like this, this is, I'm sure for Bill, been on the horizon. It's not something that he's never thought about.
And it's clearly cancer or something, because I think they say at some point that they didn't have a cure for this before the world fell to shit or something like this.
It's one of like three things. Yeah.
Bill was like, oh, what if we found a doctor who's like, what, a doctor's just coming door to door?
Right.
Into
with an MRI
town.
Machine, he says as well. So they have this day. Bill agrees, and they have this day, and it looks lovely, and you know, Frank's pointing at flowers and shit.
Yep.
And they're having a lovely day, and then they come to the dinner, and, you know, they're sad about this and everything, mm-hmm. but they're wearing their nice suits and shit. They put the rings on each other next to the piano, I think.
Yes.
Which is lovely.
Very romantic.
Same dinner, right, as day one?
It looked very similar. Post-apocalypse, you've got meat and potatoes and you'll take it. But he does the little turn of the plate. And I loved how, you know, when they first have that dinner, they're at opposite ends of the table.
Yeah.
And Bill's moved his way down to the same part of the table.
I didn't even notice that,
He should have stayed on the other end just for old times.
Just for framing purposes,
Just want the like parallel to be really, really obvious to the audience. They make him young again just for this one shot.
And so speaking of romantic, Bill is... They do the pills and the crushing and everything, and Bill swigs his wine too, and Frank's like, oh, God.
You son of a bitch.
You've done the old, you can't let me have one thing just be mine, can you?
Yeah, they should have, I know this episode was called, I think, Long, Long Time After the Song.
Yeah.
They should have called it Romeo and Romeo, because they do a classic Romeo and Juliet. Yeah.
He even says, like, this isn't the tragic suicide at the end of the play.
Yeah.
And he has this little speech that's lovely about, like, you were the reason I was doing this still. So, like, why would I fucking just keep doing it after your day? He doesn't say it like that. He's got a little more poetry to it. But basically, like, without you, why keep going?
Yeah.
And they have this romantic last drink together and go to bed, and we come back to the present.
Yeah.
With Joel and Ellie getting to Bill Frank town.
It's not... I mean, it's not the next day, but it's the same year, right? I think that we'd flashed
it.
They flashed up 2023.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they clearly haven't done it that long ago.
Yeah. I guess they would have been talking on the radio, you know, within the past couple of months. Because all this other stuff has happened so quickly.
And you see the food has like a bit of mold on the plate. Right. And there's like, it's... And they mention later, Joel's like, oh, they had the radio songs on like a timer.
Yes.
So that's why it would have come over the radio recently.
Yeah, yeah.
With an LCD monitor that I don't know if it was 2003
accurate. Oh, my God.
I'm not sure about it.
I hope our listener got fired for that. Yeah. Yeah.
Or at least does now. Show this to your bosses. Do the right thing.
Yeah. Andrew, you got to get us on in season two as 2003 consultants.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be such a nightmare about the 2003 stuff going forward too. I can't help but be thinking of it all the time.
Hey, it's fair. It's like... It's easy to look up. Yeah. You Google these things.
I can remember it too. Like back, you know, Back to the Future. I wasn't there in the 50s. But the fucking 2003.
Yeah.
I was walking around.
That's high school time. That's when our memories were at their most effective.
You might even say that I've not progressed since. But they've kind of locked themselves in the bedroom there, and there's a note on the table there for Joel eventually that Ellie reads to him.
Yeah.
That's, you know, not the nicest note in the world.
Right, yeah. Right.
Bill's like
that was nice. And Bill's like, I didn't really like you, but I respect you and I get you. And so it's very this guy. It's clearly what Bill was like.
Yeah. Didn't like you, but I guess you count as my friend.
And the level of progression for this guy, fuck off, the government's always been Nazis, 9/11 was an inch. I like that bit early where it's like, can you think the government's not? And they are Nazis now. But not before.
Yes.
Tell that back in the day, Bill would have been taking down hours and hours of Strong Bad, for sure.
Well, by 2003, again.
Yeah.
Really?
Bill...
Strong Bad's... pre that, isn't he?
I doubt it.
Really? Newgrounds and stuff is
I reckon it's around then. Yeah. I reckon it's around then.
You're hitting about, but I think you're maybe 2004 or something.
Nah. Because I was almost out of high school by that point.
Yeah, exactly. I was watching Frog in a Blender and stuff in like year 8.
Okay. Primary school, year
Happy
8.
Happy Tree Friends and shit, actually. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Well, he's loving all of that.
He would be.
That hair, that's like, all right, I know what this guy was doing on the internet in 2000.
This guy's been online Rickrolling him or whatever.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Not quite again. But the progression for Bill to go from not today, you jackbooted fucks or whatever, to Joel, I want you to have my guns.
Yeah.
For him to be able to move to that point where he's like, he was a survivalist. That's what he called himself. His only interest was surviving.
Right.
And he loved this man enough to give up even that.
Yep.
Yeah.
To give up all, it literally is survival, but then all his bits and pieces too. And now Joel's got this lovely cache where he can go craft a car battery in the garage.
Yes. Yep. But they showed the workbench.
They did.
They showed the workbench from the game. Sorry for non-game players to reference the game, but there's a workbench.
They also showed Joel and Ellie, who are big parts of the game as well.
And
I don't remember that.
Ellie gets to a bit of the letter that says, please use all these guns to look after Tess.
Yeah.
And can't say Tess, and Joel can't fucking hear it either. And
yep.
Puts his hand up in this really like, don't you dare fucking talk to me way. After they, you know, they walk, go and sort themselves out. And Joel comes back in with a plan. He's like, look, I've got car batteries here.
Mm-hmm.
My brother used to be a Firefly. We're going to drive to him.
Yeah.
We're going to...
Full tank of gas. A packet of cigarettes.
Yeah. Yep.
We're driving to Chicago.
Oh, hell yeah.
Ellie also, we see her. She's been trying to get a gun the whole
time.
Oh, yeah. She's been with Joel. Yeah. She keeps seeing guns. She sees him in the bunker. She sees him one earlier in the... Oh, like when Joel's leaving behind the
machine gun
that he's got. She's like, well, if it's got no ammo anyway, why can't I...
And Joel's no. And in unspokenly is like, because you're a kid, you don't know how to use a gun. It's dangerous for you to have one.
Yeah.
And so she picks up the same gun that Frank got out of the drawer.
Yeah.
The guy who came into Bill's solo life and ended up saving him.
Yeah.
Ellie's got that fucking gun now.
So she's got that. Joel doesn't know she's got it, but that's, she's got a little, she's carrying a piece.
Mm-hmm.
But packing. So before they leave, and he doesn't know, Joel... We're going to go find my brother. Maybe the Fireflies. We can find out where they are from there. Get you to this lab.
Yeah.
There's three rules. Number one, you never bring up Tess again. Yeah. And in fact, we don't talk about our past at all.
Yeah.
That's rule number fucking one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rule number two was something. Don't show anyone your bite.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
They're not going to think about it. They're going to shoot you. You keep this between you, don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
Which was Marlene's first rule for her, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yes, mm-hmm. yes, it was, yeah.
And then rule number three is do everything I say.
Yeah.
It's like, well,
you could have
make
done that
rule
first.
Number one, and yeah. then I have to follow rule two.
That's
and three.
A good lead-in.
Have you never read Asimov? Don't you know that the order of operations matters
rule,
here?
I think rule four is if it's your first night at Fight Club, you have to fight.
Yeah.
And that's it.
The way that Ellie respects the test thing and is like similarly closed off to Joel, because there were a couple of moments in the last episode where she was, you know, being asked like, okay, well, what did you do before? And you can tell that she's talking around it and cracking a joke to avoid talking about something and or like opening up at all, really. Yep. Like she's clearly very smart and she knows what's going on and she's talking around people. So the similarity between her and Joel there of like her not being able to say Tess, him not being able to hear Tess, both of them being pretty comfortable with like, all right, we're not going to talk about anything real.
Well, I guess, is it at the end or at the start where she is like, hey, just to be clear, you chose to take me.
At the very start,
you chose to do this for your own personal reasons. I didn't kill Tess.
Yeah,
I didn't make you
responsible.
Do this.
Yeah, I'm not responsible. Don't blame me.
You were getting, you were getting something out of it. Yeah. So it wasn't, no one,
I didn't force you to do it. And he does acknowledge, I feel like, he's like, well, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which she brings it up though.
Yeah.
So she's got that mindset of like blame and responsibility and like trying to avoid that. But yeah, it is interesting.
By the way, I love this moment when they turn when Ellie and Joel turn back up.
Yeah.
When we cut to present day and they're out the front of Frank and Bill's house and they see the flowers are just dead.
Yeah.
And that being the first thing of like, I guess Frank must not be around anymore.
Right.
And then they drive away and there's a Linda Ronstadt tape in the pickup truck.
Ugh.
And this is the first time Ellie's ever been in a car. She thinks it's like a spaceship to her.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't know what a fucking seatbelt is. A lot like too many people.
Plenty of jokers out there on the road.
And they drive
buckle
off.
Buckle up, kids.
Yeah.
They've got this like a bit more of an understanding and a mission they're on the same page, seemingly for the first time. Joel and Ellie here.
Yeah, it's not frantically being thrown together. It's not out of necessity. This is a decision they've made to do this together. Yeah,
and it's on their terms this time. Joel set his rules. Yep. He's not just there for backup for Tess, basically.
He's
leading it.
They've got enough to get by, it seems like. The plan seems like it might even work out.
It doesn't seem too crazy. Like, he was going to drive there anyway.
Yeah.
He's got this fucking car. They got a bunch of guns, you'd assume, in the boot.
Yeah.
The tray.
Yeah. And they got toilet paper.
They got some toilet paper.
Yeah. Mm. Very scarce, I assume.
Yeah, how the fuck did he have that still? 20 years?
That's got to be the first thing to go. Like, clearly. Interesting.
We got you fired twice, motherfucker.
But a couple of closed off dudes opening up a little bit to different extents.
One of them did.
Yeah.
And it shows you in that same period of time. And it was a surprise to me to see Tess with Joel in 2010.
Yeah.
I think it was at that point.
Yeah.
So they've been together. And the way he talked about her is like, oh, well, I don't want to put labels on it.
Right. That's 13 years later. Yeah.
Exactly. So like this, having this great individual story that is also such a good parallel for the world didn't make Joel like this.
Right.
Joel is being like this. He is a similar, if not more extreme version who had every opportunity to literally, and he was able to accept love in his life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And someone else.
Yeah.
So like this episode is blaming Joel for how isolated he is, which I loved.
That's it. I think that's, like I said before, I think it paints Joel as self-destructive. This is a punishment or a negative aspect to his life that he has chosen for whatever reason.
For I guess he blames himself for losing Sarah,
he's
right?
Like, he just can't deal with it.
Day one,
yeah,
the only person he cared about even back then other than Tommy, I guess, was Sarah.
Yeah.
And she died immediately.
Yeah.
So he's clearly not. And the pause before the pancakes and he's still wearing the watch and like he's weirdly enough traumatized by the death of his daughter.
Yeah.
Loser.
As a survivalist, I think I'd be able to move past. But yeah, just such a beautifully made episode.
Yeah.
So great. Nice to see, like, proper fucking gay romance.
Full on, like, two adult dudes. Because, like, you get your coming of age stuff now, seeing a lot more queer representation on Netflix in, sort of, like, teen dramas and stuff. Yeah. But, yeah, it's not something that... like you see in much media at all, let alone the most popular TV show at the moment.
This type of romance, not just dating. I like that sort of thing.
True, like actual, yeah, mature love. Yeah.
And I loved this last shot from within, I assume, their bedroom, because they mentioned in the note that, look, we've done this, don't come into the bedroom. We've left the window open so that the whole house won't stink.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, the shot of... From the other side of the window, curtains kind of billowing in the breeze.
Yes.
As we see them, driving off.
To look for Tommy.
To look for Tommy, yes. That's somewhere their between next goal. Boston and Wyoming, I think they say, right?
Joel mumbled where he was and I kind of missed it, but he did say a place.
Somewhere Wyoming, which is, Midwest. They're going across the country.
I can't. Because I guess it was the radio tower that was the thing that was nearer by that he was initially going to try and go to. But now he's just like, well, we got this fucking car. Let's go to Tommy.
Yes.
Yep.
I suppose that was it. Yep. Maybe we've got the detail on that slightly wrong. But either way, we'll find out more. I'm loving the chemistry that this show is able to build between people. You know, these characters who hadn't been in it at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And just this episode about them was fully interesting the whole time and didn't feel like a side note.
Yeah. Mm.
And seeing Joel and Ellie slowly have this, you know, very different, obviously, because it's obviously not a romantic relationship, but it's like this, the closed walls coming down.
Right.
Is interesting to see a good model of that show up so you can see how... poorly Joel did it with Tess.
Yeah.
And
Well, in the HBO podcast, the showrunners have talked about how they both consider it to be, it's a love story. But it's about love, you know, not just being for good, doesn't just make you do good things. It's like some fucking bad things happen.
Mm.
And yeah, I just love seeing all the different facets of that, all these different types of relationships.
Mm.
Well, we'll see, I assume, more from Joel and Ellie next week. It was, as you say, Knox, I agree, it was a relief to see a tragic, but for a large part, a hopeful story in episode 3.
And worth pointing out to people who haven't played the game before we go into the sealed section, the character of Bill is in it. Frank has mentioned, but this is basically original for the show.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously that doesn't necessarily matter if you've not played the game, but it just gives me a really, it's a positive sign of they're just making a new thing here and they're willing to make that as good as they can.
Yes.
Rather than being beholden to a different medium that is 10 years old, you know, like.
Yeah.
I love how different all these three episodes have been from one another too.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Well, we'll watch another one in a week.
Maybe it'll be a comedy or something next week.
If you're TV only, then now's your time to leave us.
If you like us talking about TV shows, we have more content available for you if you would like to sign up to our Patreon.
Oh, yeah.
The three of us have another show and we have a Patreon for it that's been going for a long time. So if you go to patreon.com/filthycasualspod, we do a bonus podcast every week where we talk about movies and TV shows and books and comics and shit that happened to us.
We were doing White Lotus recaps on there a little while ago, so you can go back and listen through to all of them if you like that show.
There is like 240 episodes of that if you want to give us a little cash, if you appreciate our work.
patreon.com/filthycasualspod. Did you say that?
I did. That is where to go. And if you want to just give us a bit of love... for free, little review on your podcast platform of choice would be very, very appreciated.
And keep the emails coming. It's been great seeing the inbox bursting.
It is.
We're reading them and, you know, obviously the show goes long enough talking about the show, so we don't want to do but we're reading all of them, and it's great to have that discussion, and we should reply to some of them in there too.
Yeah, I think we will, because some of them, like if we read them out and replied to them on the show, it would spoil the show. So
yeah,
right.
We do genuinely. Yeah, we read all the emails. We love them. We'll get back to some people that we
especially
can't
especially if you're listening and you're Pedro Pascal.
Yeah, exactly.
Why didn't let us know?
Yeah, if you
that'd be cool for us to find out.
If you worked on the show from the executive producer down to the
best
guy
boy
who emailed in.
Yeah. Catering. We'll take that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thanks for listening, people who are TV only. From soon on, spoilers for both games. All of the Last
the
of Us stuff.
For
and
the
DLC
game.
And everything. Yes. Every Last of Us thing that's out. I'm giving you lots of time here.
Yep.
If you're just watching the TV show.
If you've like hurt your back and you're on the ground, now is your chance to crawl to your phone and press pause.
You've only got moments left.
Yeah.
Pull the car over and hit stop on your Linda Ronstadt tape.
Yes.
Well, no, put that in. Turn this off and then chuck the Linda Ronstadt cassette
on Spotify.
But yeah, thanks TV people. We'll see you next week. Those of you who are happy with spoilers for everything about The Last of Us, including the game, now you're in the sealed section.
Yeah, that's right.
I loved the change of this from what it was in the game. Like,
all
of this was kind of there. Like, we knew Bill was there and he was a paranoid dude and he had this town.
And he looked like Nick Offerman.
Right, and there was one letter that gave you kind of some idea that there was someone else there with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember it being as detailed as this, obviously.
No, I think it was implied that it was a gay relationship.
But that they'd broken up or something. I feel like there was something where it was tense or he was going to leave or I can't.
I think so. I think maybe he was going to leave. Yeah.
But making this, like we talked about without in the non-spoilery bit, the parallel between how open Bill got and how open Joel is capable of being.
Mm.
I loved that. I loved seeing it contextualize these last 20 years and show us what life. It's just such a good fucking episode.
Yeah. I did not expect it. I really thought going in that we were going to get some shenanigans getting Joel and Ellie getting here from the, you know, surviving that, like, you know, situation with Tess. A lot of reflections on Tess dying, a bit of, you know, arguments. And then eventually we'd get to this town and there'd be like a threat. And they'd have to band together because what happens in the game, right, is that they get there and then like a zombie horde attacks and Bill gets killed.
There's a bunch of zombies. I don't think Bill gets killed. He stays behind heroically.
Right.
And like pushes your car down the hill.
Yeah.
And
then he's like,
Bill
I'm not coming with you.
Yeah.
You're caught by one of his traps, right?
Yeah.
And you're in that bit where you're hanging upside down.
But that's the main thing is it's going through Trap Town.
For
gameplay reasons. But changing that to be like, well, what's the actual story here?
Right.
It was that these two guys lived here and that they interacted with Joel and Tess, which you barely get in the game as well.
Yeah.
Very little.
Because he does know him, right? But not
It's the exact same setup.
Same.
But you just don't have the actual demonstration of it.
Yeah, because he functions in the game as a guy who is going to get you through this chapter.
Yeah.
Basically.
And they're standoffish in that same. But you like fight one of the big ones in a school gym or something.
Yeah.
Like the town is a lot bigger.
Yes, that's right.
I found the note from the game. Well, Bill, I doubt you'd ever find this note because you were too scared to ever make it to this part of town. But if for some reason you did, I want you to know I hated your guts. I grew tired of this shitty town and your set in your ways attitude. I wanted more from life than this and you could never get that. And that stupid battery you kept moaning about, I got it. But I guess you were right. Trying to leave this town will kill me. Still better than spending another day with you. Good luck, Frank.
Yeah, right.
So it's like super different.
Yeah. Super video gaming.
Chucking some fucking love into this world is so important for this story to prove that it can still exist.
Yeah.
When we've seen so much backstabbing and betrayal and unhappiness and even in just these couple of episodes and like romantic relationship we have isn't romantic with Joel and Tess. Like they're not kind to each other in the same way.
And I also think that everything we've seen in the previous two episodes has hit so much harder and bleaker than the game. You know, like the game to this point is still, it's like, it's pretty intense, but it's a fun game where you're sneaking around and
it's popcorn,
you know. The TV show, you are watching a very depressing, bleak world and a very tense story within that world. So you had to have some nice stuff at this point.
Right, and it's not fun to crouch under tripwires in a show.
Yeah.
That's boring. I really liked just a game thing, a Last of Us 2 thing.
Yeah.
At the end of this episode, Ellie getting in the car and saying it's like a spaceship and being excited about that.
Yes.
One of my favorite scenes from The Last of Us 2 is that spaceship scene.
Yes. Yep.
Setting that up as Ellie's thing right now is sick.
Yeah.
I really liked that.
But yeah, we've commented on it a bit last week, the departure from the spores and all that stuff, and then going really in detail on
mushrooms.
Mushrooms causes spreading. It's cool. I like it. I like that is also something that appears to be getting fleshed out or changed and then fleshed out a lot more. I really love all that stuff, and I do hope we keep getting flashbacks.
Especially in the world of TV, like, it gives it a bit more of a differentiation from, obviously, The Walking Dead is the big one where the virus in that is just like, oh, I don't know, it's a virus and I guess the world ended, and it's a MacGuffin because it can be. It doesn't matter.
Sure.
And that's still the same kind of for this story. Like, you'd accept it if it wasn't there.
Yeah.
But having it be there is a little bit more reality.
Yes.
Injected in.
And it, like, the whole it being a fungus thing is, like, it's so specific to this game and the concept of The Last of Us that, give it a bit of airplay. It is interesting and it is a point of difference.
That cordyceps shit's real and mantises and stuff.
Right, right. That also is, I think, why, when you hear about it going fucking haywire in 3 days and it being based on, like, you know, real stuff in nature is a bit spooky.
Yeah. Great ep.
Really liked it.
Yeah. Just a short hour and 15.
And do you know what? A cool feeling from the game to have, like, Bill die in this, which didn't happen in the game in the same way.
Right, yes.
And, like, to just know that they don't feel restrained by what the game did.
Totally.
It's a cool thing going forward.
Totally, totally.
And that season 2 announcement. And so I'm surprised that they said, we'll do Last of Us 2 as season 2.
I don't think he said that, but he has said we're adapting.
I always assumed that they would be adapting the second game.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's necessarily said, but you would think, you would think so.
I guess.
For him to be commenting, commenting on it now, it must mean that they're plotting that out now.
Yeah. Because
if they were thinking they were going to do 2 seasons worth of, like, in between kind of stuff, then they still wouldn't be thinking about it. Or they'd be working on it and maybe thinking, like, oh, I might veer off at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. So that's,
I'm really interested to see as well, game talk. We're a third of the way through now, and Joel and Ellie are only just starting to really even talk to each other, and there's a lot of coldness and wall there still. I'm interested to see how they do that.
That's true. A lot of stuff has happened, but, that relationship is so key, and it has to be in a very different place.
Do you think
in
we
a few hours? Yeah.
Do you think we see possibly towards the end of the season? Do we see a young Abby?
Given that
her dad's the doctor, do they do a bit of, you know?
I reckon.
Do they start to
not a cameo,
but a background?
I reckon we maybe see that doctor, like, we see his day, we see him heading to. You know what I mean?
I mean, 100% we see Joel kill him.
Yeah, exactly.
Abby was nearby, as well as, I forget his name, but that other guy. Remember him? The other guy, Abby's boyfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Owen.
Owen, that's
it. I don't mean
it.
That explicitly, but maybe, like, I think definitely we see.
I think we will. I think it might be set up as a cliffhanger.
We'd get the doctor kind of fleshed out a bit more to give it that. You know, that impact.
I can see it.
I think you can't do it because the reveal of why Abby's after Joel is part of that story.
Yeah.
Later.
Yeah.
I think they keep their cards close to their chest. Like, we don't get the daughter running up after the doctor's dead and going, no, dad.
Yeah.
I don't think anything like that. I don't think anything that you see in the second, but I think, like, I could see them, like they're doing with this, just adding their own stuff to it.
Possibly.
In a way where you, like, maybe you don't see his daughter. Maybe you just, like, they do set up because they're really loving, really hitting how intense this stuff is. Mm-hmm. So it's not just going to be Joel killing some random guy. It makes sense the way they're doing this, that you would see him get up in the morning, have his breakfast, and maybe it's just like an offhand comment.
I could imagine.
Oh, he's already gone to school or whatever. Yeah,
I could imagine us getting like right before Joel pulls the trigger or something.
Yeah.
Like going back to the doctor and Marlene having the conversation of should they operate on Ellie.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like maybe that taking, and like Marlene go, or like the doctor going like, I'd do it if it was Abby or some, you know, like
I think they'll be knowing that they're going to do that. I could see them doing a like something little, some sort of little kind of foreshadowing.
It depends on if the second season is the second game or if the second season is like some build up-y stuff.
Yeah.
Because if the second season is the second game, then as a TV show, you would have to, you'd have to have something connecting it.
The second game almost could be like three seasons.
The way that they structure the second game, though, I'm still of the opinion that that is a part of what makes that story hit.
True.
And so if you deconstruct that and put it chronologically, I don't think it's the same story anymore.
Yeah, true.
In a negative way. And so like them doing too much of Abby, anything in the second season, like if they played out chronologically now what happens in two, which would make the most sense from like the actors aging and shit, but they've done a lot of age makeup already.
Yeah,
true.
But I don't know. I think the way that reveals who Abby is and what's going on with that is part of that story enough that if they tip that off before it reduces
it. I could even see though at the very least like the last bit of the second game where you like, you know, she's on the farm and she's like gets the lead. Mm. I could see that being a jumping off. I could see everything up until then being a season, mm-hmm. and then being like, let's save that little chunk and maybe like expand on that.
Sure, maybe that is the start of something else. Yeah.
Maybe.
You know, having it switch mid-season to then now there's three Abby episodes would be fucking sick.
I wonder if that's what they're going to do. A normal person, as I was going to say.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be really jarring.
But it was for people playing the game too, and it's part of it.
Yeah, but I think there are enough differences that it, I don't know.
There's a similar thing done in another show that I don't want to say what it is because it gives part of it away. But like a similar, let's join this other group of people who we don't know and they're the other side of the conflict and watch them for a while. And it really works in that.
Lost?
No.
Because it happens in Lost and it actually is good in Lost.
And it's a different show that I've watched.
Okay.
And it's good in that show too. And it's good in The Last of Us 2 game. I want them. I would love to see that story told similarly to The Last of Us 2 be put in front of an audience of normal people and to have them react normally to it would be really nice.
I mean, I'd hate that. It really would drive home how fucked a lot of gamers are.
Yeah. Guess what? Beep, beep, we're driving home.
Yeah. Well, like, because the other thing too is that, like, I think there's way more story in The Last of Us 2 than there is in The Last of Us 1. Like, there's definitely beats in The Last of Us 1, but a lot of it is, like, we're journeying from A to B and we're doing a lot more combat.
Two characters,
and you've got heaps of that still in 2, but you've got, like, way more beats of story to get through in season, which is, like, the only reason I say I could see them stretching it out and adding some stuff in and just finding some different beats to go to of, like,
yeah, maybe
have a season finale here. Because if you were doing 9 episodes again, fuck, you would be tearing through it. If you're spending a lot of time with Abby, if you're spending a lot of time with, like,
I mean, we just had a whole episode that was with Bill and Frank though, right? And like they are barely in,
but that's what I mean, literally, isn't it? They're expanding on, because, you know, they've got the room to expand on what's in the first game in terms of, like, beats that they have to hit.
You've got
to
set up in a way that isn't like in the game it is done through gameplay, but it's like, who are the Scars?
Yeah.
What is their deal? Honestly, there probably should have been more in the game because I only feel like I vaguely have an idea of it.
You get that like one walkthrough, right? When you first kind of take control of Abby the jump, you get that one.
Stadium.
Yeah, and you have like a burrito and shit, and you bribe the dog, and you're having a talk with the chickens,
and like the weird like culty stuff, and like it can't just be like set dressing as it is in a game,
because in a show you're going to be like, well, what is this? Who is this? Why does it exist? What is their motivation? Right. It can't just be like a threat.
I got Scars and Abby's group mixed up.
Abby's the wolves.
Yeah,
that's right.
The scars are the
It can't just be cool atmosphere or like a cool location, like in a game. It has to be.
Yeah.
Like, I think you're right. Like, maybe second season is first half of Last of Us.
I mean, whatever they do, it's like.
What's his name? The fucking kid? Abby's kid?
Oh, yeah. I forget.
What's his name? Fucking.
Oh, fuck.
Lay or Lee or like.
Lev. And Yara?
Yara is.
His sister?
His sister? Or like. Because he kills his mum.
Yeah.
It's so funny in the sealed section. We literally just can't even spoil the other games because we don't remember them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But having Lev, you're right, like an episode in just Lev's life leading up to killing his fucking mother.
There's so much
you integrate Lev into Abby's story. And I think there's so much material. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out.
One day.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, guys. Yeah. Like we said, send us an email.
Yeah.
Leave us a review.
Yes.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.